It's that time of year again when your nice hosts take a few weeks off. The program will resume with new episodes in the first week of March, or at the end of February for Patreon supporters. But each week until then, your nice hosts will re-air one of our favorite episodes from 2025, along with a few new thoughts about each one. This week's nice replay is episode 381, Dinosaurs of North Dakota, originally published March 13th, 2025. Sam Baseman, this one is for you. My first game jam on the show, and Dale gave me a dinosaur prompt, which you can tell delighted me to my very core. And I also think that even in design document form, this is a great example of a positive impact game, which of course is the side of game dev I come from, because it's designed to have the player learn and come away thinking without being instructional. It's a game and episode version of the tongue-in-cheek thing that my mom would say to me growing up, be careful, you might learn something.
Like, truly. Yeah, I really love this one too, because it was a brilliant combination of using mechanics to teach, but also no goal of it subtracted from another goal that it had.
This was one of the ones I was like the most sad about afterwards, because it's like, this is such a great idea, but like it would take a lot of work.
We're not going into production immediately. Which hurts even harder for video games, because with board games we can at least pretend we're gonna make it. Which we've done.
This one's really cool though.
I was just happy you liked it so much. I knew you liked dinosaurs, so I put it in.
good prompt.
Again, new episodes resume at the top of March. If you want to skip ahead 1 week and make the wait a bit shorter, you can do that and get all of our episodes ad-free, plus exclusive bonus audio. That's pretty nice, too, at patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
Let's start.
Oh, dang, I wasn't sure if we were gonna. Okay.
Yes.
That's all the nonsense we've allocated. Dale has sent us a prompt.
Yes. Dale sent the prompt to Lydia.
Right.
Okay. This time. Game jam. There's both a prompt and a preamble.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, Dale. The game jam prompt preamble. Dale has been playing Wingspan lately. Oh, God, I love that game. So she thought, make a game about the original birds, dinosaurs.
Oh.
I love dinosaurs. This is so good. The prompt, make a game about the feeding habits of dinosaurs or of paleontologists. Bonus points if all the dinosaurs are from the same era.
Oh.
Because that's the thing that no dinosaur fiction gets right.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, you got to have the greatest hits from every era, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so. Such as.
Steven knows. He just wants to see.
So, like, right. So you got the T-Rex in the Cretaceous period. You've got anything that is large and four-legged and vegetarian. So, like, your brachiosauruses and stuff. Okay. That's going to be the Jurassic period.
Okay.
The Triassic period is a lot of smaller stuff. So, I think of, like, Compsognathus, I believe, is the Triassic period. A lot of smaller things like that. And then you also have prehistoric reptiles that are not dinosaurs if you want to go before then. But that's out of scope. That's a lot of million years of history. And they're not technically dinosaurs because they have the wrong hip shape anyway.
Wow. Okay. I'm outclassed.
This is what happens when you have a sibling who is neurodivergent and his special interest is dinosaurs. You end up watching a lot of BBC's Walking with Dinosaurs and literally everything else.
Okay.
Nice.
Cool.
So yeah. I am hype.
Okay. So, favorite dinosaur on the table?
I don't know, raptors? I don't know.
I am partial to velociraptors, even though they are objectively terrifying, and I do get nightmares about them.
Right. Yeah. Even though, like, in reality, they're, like, the size of chickens?
I don't think they're quite chicken size, but they are, like, half the size of what you would think of like in Jurassic Park. That does not mean they're any less deadly.
Right.
That's true. Still horrifying. Okay. And, yeah.
Weird that you both chose that. Scary also. For me, Triceratops.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Big lumbering plant eater.
Mm-hmm.
Big heart, you want to give it a hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, kind of like, tough and cool.
Yeah.
That was the one growing up, I liked.
Yeah.
The one that I'm most afraid of is Spinosaurus.
Oh, yeah.
It's huge. It's got pointy teeth. It is fully aquatic.
Oh.
And, to me, I think everyone thinks of T-Rex as being the biggest bad.
Sure.
Spinosaurus is that villain where you know he's bad, and then when you get to know him, you're like, oh, he's even more evil and scary than I thought he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, scary.
Yeah.
I'm just
starting to recognize that, like, I haven't really thought about dinosaurs since I was 12.
Yeah, right?
And I think that's why I was having a hard time coming up with, like,
like, the details drift away, but it never really leaves you.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, yeah. And
I... we have an expert at the table.
I was just about to say, my knowledge is outdated. There's definitely more than I remember from the day.
Well, we're going to be leaning on you regardless.
Yes.
Cool. So I'm our subject matter
same,
expert.
I feel like I've, you know, I was a dinosaur sort of facts kid, for sure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I think, you know, I didn't take that with me into adulthood. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Is there an era that has both Velociraptors and Triceratops?
No, they are completely opposite.
Okay.
Dang.
So if we want Triceratops and we could get T-Rex, that would be the Cretaceous period. Uh-huh. So immediately before the extinction.
Okay.
Fun fact, that's also the first period. That is when flowering plants evolved.
Oh, neat.
So we think of angiosperms, the plants that have flowers, mm-hmm. as they make up most of the flora on the planet, right? They did not exist until the same time as Triceratops and T-Rex, which is wild.
Yeah,
especially because they're so ubiquitous now. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. So we can have feature flowering plants as part of the feeding habits.
Yeah.
So it's about feeding habits of dinosaurs or of paleontologists.
Like that, she just throws us a curveball.
So that's going to be like tortillas and Nutella out of a pack.
Yeah.
Bonus points if all the dinosaurs are from the same era. So we're not going to talk about the fact that they have cloacas. Sure. We've got herbivores, carnivores, and omnivores, mm-hmm. and insectivores. And this is also a good time if we want to slightly branch outside of dinosaurs, we can also feature early mammals.
Sure.
Because they also existed during the Cretaceous period.
Okay.
Right, okay.
Like rodents?
Yeah.
Class?
Yeah. Little rodent-y guys live underground, very small. And then immediately after the dinosaur extinction, large birds, and then mammals took over.
Okay.
So.
I mean, it sounds like we should go with the Cretaceous.
I think Cretaceous. Let me Google.
Then at least one of us are happy with their favorite dinosaur in there.
Well, I was thinking about, like you just said, you know, Triceratops and T-Rex. Those are, like, as a kid, because I was a kid before the movie Jurassic Park,
sure.
like Velociraptors were popularized by that movie.
Yes.
Oh, Velociraptors are in Cretaceous period, apparently.
Oh, okay. Oh, we get those too.
All right.
But what I was about to say is, like, yeah. I feel like when you said, like, Triceratops and T-Rex, those were, and then there's, like, Stegosaurus and, they're called Allosaurus then.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a certain amount that would be on the placemat. On the kids menu or whatever.
Yeah.
I wonder if those are principally from the Cretaceous period.
Oh, maybe.
And then only later is, you know, interest in it broadened.
Yeah, I'm wondering if all of the dinosaurs from the Land Before Time are like from the same period.
Stegosaurus is in the Land Before Time. Mm-hmm. I think those are Jurassic period.
Okay.
And Kylosaurus is Cretaceous period. So I'm looking at dinosaurs.
Stegosaurus was always there because
Stegosaurus
was always one of them in the mix with the other.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because it's so iconic. I mean, you have to have like the unique silhouettes is the rule of characters.
Right. Right. And all the long neck ones. There were like five or six types, but as a kid, you just only knew it as one because they all look the same.
Yeah. So this is, I'm looking at nhm.ac.uk from the Natural History Museum, dinosaurs in the late Cretaceous period. So 101 to 66 million years ago. We've got some absolute bangers like Albertosaurus and Kylosaurus.
Uh-huh.
So the one which is kind of round on the top and got the big hammer on its tail.
Oh,
another classic. Oh, Antarctosaurus. I forgot that they found dinosaur fossils in Antarctica, but that is a thing.
Okay.
We've got some raptors. A lot of these I've never heard of. We got Carnotaurus, Centrosaurus, lots of ceratopsians, so related to Triceratops, etc. Carithosaurus. We've got Diplodocus. Lots of Edmontonia, very gentle, kind of same armored herbivore from similar
to Canadian dinosaur.
Yeah. We've got Gallimimus, known for running very fast.
Okay.
We've got a whole bunch of really neat guys. Okay. Hadrosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
these all seem great. I think we should go with, I mean, we don't have a game yet, but we have a period, and that's important.
We've made some progress just now.
Mm-hmm.
Ornithomimus. Oviraptor. Oviraptor is really fun.
What is that?
So Oviraptor is called Egg Thief because they discovered the fossils in the deserts of Mongolia and the Gobi Desert.
Mm.
They found these fossils on top of a clutch of eggs, and the explorer, the paleontologist, assumed it was because he was stealing them, hence Oviraptor, egg thief. And then China closed because of the Communist Party closed China. Once it reopened, people could finally go there and get more fossils. And they found out that they found a mother oviraptor sitting on a clutch of eggs, like actually sitting like a bird.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And the eggs were in a circle, like how eggs how birds arrange their eggs in a circle to keep them evenly warm, which proved that it wasn't that they were stealing eggs. They were probably laying. That was probably their nest.
Oh, right. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Cool. Okay, game.
Feeding habits, Cretaceous. if we're thinking about... have you played Wingspan?
I have played it, but I have very few memories.
I have as well.
I'll need to be
reintroduced. Okay, cool. So we have... in Wingspan, we have the three like habitats.
Right.
We have different birds. I guess they're dinosaurs. And they have the different food tokens, which are bugs, fish, rodents, and seeds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have food types. We have... dinosaurs, yeah. Different types of dinosaurs. Do we have habitats, or do we want to arrange them in a different kind of stratigraphy?
I want to push back against the idea that we were trying to recreate Wingspan.
That's fair.
I don't think that's what we're trying to do.
Also, Lydia, you said before we started that you'd rather we make a video game design.
That is true. I guess I'm more thinking of like, what are the kind of variables that exist in Wingspan?
Yeah.
And then do we, like, what other variables do we need to discover about dinosaurs and stuff in order to create whatever system?
Yeah, part of the reason why I wanted to push back against Wingspan is I think that Wingspan is like likes the idea of birds, but is also mainly just kind of about points, not really about birds. So like it doesn't feel that. I mean, that's my opinion, I guess. but it doesn't
address your letters too.
Yeah, nicegames.club/feedback. There's a whole section to complain to me about it. If you but like I think that we could be a little bit more appreciative of the material and like implement that some way into the design of the game.
Sure.
Yeah.
More of a narrative hook.
Yeah.
I guess I want to say like I think Wingspan Wingspan has made me interested in learning more about birds.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I think to honor what you've said.
Yeah.
This is a game for someone who really likes dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be convinced to or doesn't need to be piqued with their interest about corvids.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Yes, yes, yeah. Okay.
Someone is, whatever, but that's not a name of the game.
Yeah.
We're following sort of Steven's direction on it.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then, like, we could, you're right, I think, if the intent was let's get people into some obscure dinosaurs, we could hot swap dinosaurs in for corvids and raptors and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But especially like if we're talking for someone like me who likes dinosaurs and may want to learn a little bit more but has a solid start, maybe then that's kind of the intent we're going or the direction we're going in.
Yeah.
And that's a very different place from Wingspan, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're trying to make this a video game. We really don't even have a genre. But, well, I mean.
The genre is dinosaurs.
Yeah, come on, Steven.
Of course. Sorry.
There's a couple of natural options.
Yeah.
Like there's a sort of simulator, right? Like an ant farm kind of idea.
Yeah.
I don't know that I love that, but it seems like the first kind of way, like, you know, you have animals and you feed animals.
Yeah. Right?
So some sort of like, simulator or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or
yeah.
Animal Crossing Eve almost, where you're maintaining a something, a little area.
Sure.
And it could be a dinosaur town or it could be a dinosaur keep. You know,
yeah, I kind of want to push back on that for two, like, very similar reasons.
Yeah.
One of them is, like, Jurassic Park has already done that with their video games.
Sure.
And also because the thing about systems-based, like, games on a subject or I think an educational subject,
mm-hmm.
is that we were able to make a perfect system, then we would know a lot more about the thing than we do, because it would be a good simulation.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We just don't know that much about dinosaurs.
Right. Yeah. So okay. we'd be simulating a pet environment, not a real environment.
Yeah.
And we don't.
Oh, okay.
That.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that works for me. I mean, I was just bringing it up because it seemed like you could get the idea almost all the way there, but I'm also not loving that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what's in between Wingspan and like dinosaur pet simulator?
Well, maybe there's something it's more and competitive is the word I'm thinking of, but it's not in the game sense, but like where you're playing as a dinosaur and the player's job is to understand your avatar's needs.
Uh-huh.
And so you're just focusing on one.
Yeah.
And maybe the as a video game, the play, you know, the multiple playthroughs could be you playing at different dinosaurs and approaching the environment differently.
Yeah.
Sussing out, maybe you have there's things your senses are different from dinosaur to dinosaur, so you go through the same environment,
yeah,
but you experience it from the perspective of a different animal.
So
what if our three kind of stratigraphy units was size?
Okay.
Talking about before we like earlier in today, you were talking about how you two were kind of like the average height, but 1 inch, which meant that you had a very kind of consistent view of the world, which is different than people who are shorter or taller than you.
Right. Yeah.
A T-Rex is going to have an extremely different perspective on the world and what is available to it than a Velociraptor because of the size difference.
Oh.
You know what that, by the by, what that makes me think of, weirdly, is Katamari Damacy.
Yeah.
Because
you start out with one perspective of the world, and later in the game, you have a different perspective, and you almost don't even realize you're going over the same spaces.
Yeah.
So that's not the mechanic I'm interested in.
Right.
But if you play through multiple times, you are presented with the same environment, but from a totally different perspective, and you can get a different, like a broader lens on the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's interesting.
I love that.
The same, and the same like plot of land.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much how ecologists will rope off like a meter by meter, and they'll go like, okay, what's the bugs? What's the birds? What's flora and fauna in this one thing? And it's a huge diversity in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
We were talking about the early mammals. They could just be scurrying around under the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we have a dinosaur that knows how to find them.
Oh, dip. Okay, I know how to bring the archaeologist into this.
Ooh.
Paleontologist.
Paleontologist is what I meant and totally did say. All right, so there's a mode of the game where you play through as different animals and you learn more and more about the environment.
Okay.
And then the last thing you do is you play as the paleontologist.
Uh-huh.
And you now have some context. You have your training and you like know more about what to look for. And then you collect evidence of your previous playthroughs.
Oh.
Ooh.
Right? Now, there's no eating habits of the paleontologists, but like we'll give them some Dunkaroos or something.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
They have to stop for a snack break.
Okay. If it's in Alberta, Canada, we could go to Tim Hortons.
Well, there we go.
We could get a sponsor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
And the sort of the core framework, the narrative framework would be basically like a timeline of this one plot of land in Canada.
Yeah.
That, you know, from the Cretaceous period all the way to the modern day, with a nice skip in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not concerned about, you know, certain parts, but,
mm-hmm.
but like to sort of, so the steady, the constant is this one thing. And
yeah.
mm-hmm.
then what you are meant to sort of come away from it, the sort of narrative hook would be this, like, you know, something that you can view at and seems so simple has more depth and interest. And, you know, that's the sort of theme. That maybe not the biggest message of it, because the theme is still dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the thing that it's mostly about. But like that's the sort of subtext.
Well, that's why you end as a paleontologist and not just, you know, a waiter.
Right.
Yeah. So thinking about parameters, we got to pick then one location.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which will dictate to some extent what dinosaurs. So we're not going to have Antarcticosaurus or whatever
We're joking about Canada, but my understanding is that America is actually a very good choice.
Oh, for, yeah, like
dinosaur diversity.
T-Rexes are found and dug up in North Dakota into Alberta, Canada.
Okay.
Like actually.
Okay.
That also means so in terms of other creatures that are not dinosaurs, so anything that is flying,
mm-hmm.
Or anything that lives in the water, like a plesiosaur, that's not a dinosaur, that's a swimming reptile, aquatic.
Oh, yeah, Steven.
Okay.
those should probably be those could be featured, I think, as foodstuffs.
Sure.
And or as like environment, but they are not the active players.
Sure.
Which for one is because if we're going to be technical and it's just dinosaurs, but also because we got to have a limit on content somewhere.
Yeah.
Because dinosaurs are big and lots of them.
Yeah.
But also that could mean eventually, like, if we wanted to blow up scope, we could have our, you know, meter by meter plot in, like, the UK and do all sorts of aquatic stuff. Or
right. Whatever. This is a kind of game that could be basically a system that could mm-hmm. then be various editions of it could be in another place.
Yeah, we have our expansion pack for Southeast Asia, for the Gobi Desert, for Antarctica.
And
for
just by virtue of it being a different place. Then you now have a different collection of animals. And sometimes that might be mechanically one-to-one, but in some places it might make the game very different.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So we can imagine that as a aim for a series, but we can focus just on the core system and pick a spot in America or Canada to work with.
So let me Google.
It sounds like we could just do North Dakota, right?
Yeah, I think dinosaurs.
A little arbitrary.
Of North Dakota. Well, that's
the name. That's the name. That's the name.
And I think now is where I'll put dinosaurs. I'll plant a flag saying like a lot of what we're going to put is going to be like stub content. So we're leaning on Lydia's knowledge and Lydia's Google ability, but we're also just going to like lists of things and not declare them final.
Right. Yeah.
So according to NorthDakotaTourism.com, explore North Dakota paleontology. It is estimated that more than 600 species of dinosaurs have been found in the state.
Well, many.
Okay. We are spoiled for choice, including Triceratops, T-Rex, and Ankylosaurus, as well as mammals, turtles, fish, shark. They have shark teeth in the fossil record there as well. So we got lots of stuff in North Dakota. Okay. We have a buffet.
Sure.
And then they have... Oh, gosh, they've got... I need to not look at dinosaur terrorism right now. Because I will want to go to North Dakota. So we're spoiled for choice. Yeah. We've got lots of things. If we have scale, we've got, I think, biggest of big, so like T-Rex size things.
Yeah.
And then we should have itty-bitty tiny things. And I think we could easily describe that as like chicken or dog, like something that you would feasibly be able to house in your apartment if it was not going to eat you.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Wait. I missed something.
I'm trying to think of like size classes.
Oh, just the classes.
Yeah.
What are broadly like, the different experiences?
Yeah, when we say it's a big versus a medium versus a small.
We don't have to come up with an actual dinosaur for that in the moment. Okay,
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. So like small is something you could have, keep as a pet in your apartment. Big is T-Rex or beyond. Mm-hmm. Like, it's way bigger than a human and could not fit in a house. And then medium is like... cow-sized? Cows are big.
Yeah, I was going to say that's where the Triceratops lives. But,
yeah.
But maybe that's a little big. That's bigger than a cow. But
like...
That's not on that size.
But, you know, if T-Rex is big, then Triceratops is medium.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing that would be nice is if we're thinking about like the sort of the circle of life and all that is if, and maybe just for our purposes now, we pick one for each of the three categories, but maybe we would imagine the game would, even in its most basic form, would have a couple in each category.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice to have ones in the small category that are part of the food chain of the ones in the big category.
Oh, for sure.
Right. And I think the medium ones are going to be probably mostly herbivores, actually, right?
I believe so.
Isn't that a consequence of their size? Maybe I'm misremembering.
I mean, okay, well, Jurassic period, you could get big enough that nothing could eat you unless you were dead already.
Okay.
That's like the Brachiosaurus is one of the largest things that has ever walked the earth. So it was so big that we thought it was lived in the ocean because we thought the earth couldn't sustain, like we thought it couldn't be on land because it was so big.
Collapse.
And then they realized that it's so big that its lungs would be so underwater that they would cripple under the pressure of the water. And they were like, oh, it has to live on land. Wow. It physically could not live in the water.
Yeah.
We're not in that period. So I think it is most herbivores are in the mid tier. Yeah.
That's what I was saying. I think it's because to be bigger, you have to eat meat.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of what I thought it was. I'm distracting us.
No, I think you're right in this, but... And it is because the Jurassic period had so much vegetables that's the reason why it was flipped.
Oh, got it.
That's interesting. That is super interesting. Okay.
Right?
Right.
You get distracted by facts. Sorry. No more knowledge.
Knowledge is power, Steven. I cannot help it.
This is my job, Steven.
I know. I don't actually want to tamp down on your excitement.
If I actually could, like, as per my job, just, like, get to make a game about dinosaurs, I would love that. Ooh. Someone call my job and do that.
But that gives us a good proxy for the experience, independent of how the environment is. You have, you know, prey, omnivore, predator. Yes.
Yeah, okay. So that makes sense. So effectively what you're doing is, like, in each stage of the game, you're playing as one of these creatures. Yes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't know, move around and eat and survive for a day or something?
Yeah. Some sort of. Okay. And I think because this video game, some sort of like mission structure that we provide for the player that may not necessarily be the motivation of the animal they're playing as, but is it something that we want the player to do because it needs to be digestible because we're going to ask them to do it a bunch of times.
So I had a morbid thought.
Yeah. Oh.
What if it's the end of the Cretaceous period,
uh-huh,
and your goal is to survive as long as you can after the asteroid is hit?
That's when the asteroid hit?
So the asteroid hits, and that's when the game begins. And right. you have to survive as long as you can. And it is an exploration on how the global food system crippled because yeah. of the asteroid. And because, like, the big meat-eating dinosaurs die after the big because the big vegetarian dinosaurs don't have enough food.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of seeing, and just essentially it's a, how long can you live until you don't?
Yeah. Honestly, that's really fascinating. And it's kind of a thing that's like not, like people think, you know, the meteor happened and then everything died and they don't really think about it too much.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
But I think it's really interesting to like really explore what happened that caused all, right. You know,
like, yeah.
to end. As
they right. Died. It wasn't, they didn't all just choke on ash.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, exactly.
No, the sun, I think it was like ash blocked the sun, which killed the plants, which killed the plant-eating dinosaurs, which killed the meat-eating dinosaurs. And then the thing is like the bigger okay. you are, the more food you need.
Okay. So this is what I'm kind of thinking now, because now we can like create a tapestry of story with mm-hmm. this.
Yeah.
So the meteor hits Earth. And then you play as a Triceratops.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to try to survive as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
With limited food because all your plants are dying off.
Yeah.
And so you do that as long as you can, and then you die eventually. Mm-hmm. And then you become T-Rex, and you're trying to find the food as best you can. But you know, but all of your food sources are dying off because there's not enough plants, and those plants are killing the Triceratops. And so eventually you will die off, but you know, you're trying to survive as long as you can. And then, well, then I lost it because we're supposed to play something. We wanted something small.
The sequencing is interesting for how we tell this as a story.
Yes.
Right? And I would almost put the small one first.
Okay.
But this is, I think, relevant to, Lydia, what you were saying about the order of events.
Yeah.
Which might be interesting to, because, I mean, we can imagine each playthrough takes place roughly over the same period. We don't have to.
Yeah.
But there's something about playing it out in the sequence in which it actually happened.
Yeah.
That's interesting. We don't have to,
I actually,
but it's an interesting idea.
I kind of like the idea of ending with the small ones because we could end okay. with a scavenger.
Oh,
something
yeah.
Something small that okay. already is designed to eat dead things and it has a feast and then nothing.
Oh, I guess I was playing with the dramatic irony of like scrounging for food and then getting bigger and then having to scrounge for food and then actually having to eat your previous player, your previous.
Oh, yeah. That's you know I mean? Also good though.
You still have that,
but that's like that's you know dramatis personae. That's oh. like
well, you can
it's
still,
not necessarily
you
still do that servicing the narrative we're trying
you
to.
You still
tell,
do that for medium to big, and then small.
Yes, was, because yeah. as a scavenger, okay. you could eat a T-Rex.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If all it's right. dead.
Cool. I mean, I think just the idea of like the irony of perspective. It doesn't necessarily have to be a twist the knife kind of surprise.
Right, yeah. yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I'm all right. As long as a little bit of that, then I'm happy with whatever order makes sense for our bigger goals. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Can I throw in a potential like mechanic, and I don't know if this is actually important enough, but since we want to end with the paleontologist.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, right. Who eats all the other ones.
Right? Yeah. Well, who eats using a plastic fork, which is made from...
please write that down, okay. because that's a fun...
Yeah. Oh, eats chicken with a plastic fork. There yeah. we go. Could it? I almost want there to be like bonus points if you are if you end up in dying in a place that means you're more likely to get fossilized.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Okay.
That would actually be sort of like a meta goal for the player.
Yeah.
Is to make the paleontologist experience easier.
Well, yeah, and it's also like a kind of a almost I am Ozymandias, King of Kings.
Right,
it's like
right.
I'm of like how these a lot of the dinosaurs that died were because of a like essentially freak accidents or weather. That's why they got preserved so well.
Yes,
but there is something kind of cool about having a player behind it who knows the
right.
where they're going to be going,
and as an education to the player about fossilized creatures.
Right.
And like the fossil record, to understand that actually a lot of what we know is like a series of Pompeii's.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
It's not actually the proper history. And so we have to do. It's not a representative sample.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just that not just that understanding is actually really powerful for how you evaluate.
Yeah.
What you learn from the fossil record. So I think that's really good. And yeah, letting people do some gameplay about it seems really fun because maybe the first time through. You play your paleontologist and like you don't find any you're like I know I died here
yeah
but like you and then that's that itself is teaching that lesson
yeah
and then you get to game it with at the meta thing which is just fun for players and you know the sort of omniscience of time travel involved. That doesn't ruin any of what we're trying to say, right? Because it's just, as far as we're concerned of that story, the player is the one who guided it in all the perfect places, but history, we can say, still played out in a way that was lucky for the paleontologists.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of also, as like a meta goal, that's mm-hmm. in conflict with the goal of you as a dinosaur to some extent in a very interesting way.
Oh, I like that a lot too.
Because like, if you are a Triceratops and you want to be the most preserved, you'd walk into a tar pit.
Which you wouldn't want to do if you were
right.
Exactly.
Also, if you walk into a tar pit, you die sooner, right? So,
What's great is that this leans into everything I love about game design, mm-hmm. which is that if you do really good as one thing, then you're denied the opportunity to do really good as another thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of up to you to decide what you want to do good in.
Yeah. And it is also like T-Rex can break bones with its jaw, but that would make the Triceratops skeleton less able to be complete.
Yeah.
But also like, that does speak very much to the fact that people find marks of scavengers and predators on bones. And that's part of why we know what they eat, right?
What do you leave to the future to discover?
And what gets
forgotten?
Do you choose as a Triceratops about to die to die in a tar pit so that way you are the most preserved for the paleontologist? Or do you choose to die like in a very open area because you know as a T-Rex that would, or as a scavenger, that's going to be easier.
Yeah. Well, what's really fascinating about this is because each playthrough interacts the other playthroughs, but then the paleontologist is kind of the summation of it all.
Yeah.
It's immediately multiplicative. Like everything is combining, and it allows us to build a system when we finally have to put code to this.
Yeah.
That allows for many, many outcomes, and that's like the core of like great game systems is like something we can design that can have a life based on context and player input. That is vastly greater than what we put into it.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
I think it's also kind of an interesting idea of like, what is a successful legacy? Like, is it a more fitting narrative to have something live for as long as possible and feed others and extend that like legacy of dinosaurs that are extant?
Yeah.
Or is it a more fitting end to die preserved like in Pompeii to be talked about by a completely different species forevermore?
Right.
Like, what is more powerful of a legacy?
Yeah. Like, live fast, die young, and leave a good-looking corpse.
Yeah.
It's like, is that actually what you want?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Existentialism is another theme of this game. I love it.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know how we made this game so dark.
Well, I mean, no, the thing is you hooked it, Lydia, hooked on something, which is the framework we're playing with is time.
Yeah.
So the fact that we leverage into what time means, I love it. It's brilliant.
Oh,
this is so good.
It's so cool.
So, like, I think the other thing that it does do is one of the things I really love is separating player motivation from character motivation. Yeah. So, this brings back a little bit of the sort of SimCity kind of vibe, where like you are actually controlling everything, but in the moment you are embodying a character.
Oh, yes.
But your actual player goals are separate from the. So you know what I mean?
Your ultimate, so, yeah,
and then
your
they have attention, right? Like, this is fun to do well here, but I'm going to think about how this means everything else. It lets you, that's very, engages the brain in a really deep way, I think is really cool. And then players can choose how they want to do it. It's like, I just want to do the best at each thing, and then at the end, do the best I can discovering what happened and remembering with my paleontologist character, and that is a satisfying experience. Or I want to play this one to optimize the next one,
Yeah.
And then I need to figure out what that means and what I sacrifice. And like, both of those are correct, right?
Yeah.
That tickles me very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is cool. I like it a lot.
Hey, Stephen.
Yes.
I want some dinosaur books. Can you spot me some money for them?
Oh, see, we're a little short right now.
Oh.
If only we had some money through our Patreon account that could help us pay for these dinosaur books.
Gosh dang it. If they go to Patreon, they could see pictures of my cat.
That's true. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff on there that would be really nice for, you know, new patrons to donate to. But
does that mean I'm pimping my cat?
No. Okay, so go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub and see Lydia's cat, but also help us have money so that we can get Lydia some new dinosaur books or whatever else.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's great.
I just had that horrible thought.
Is that good? Or
I'm waiting for Lydia to stop laughing.
Oh.
So, I mean, we're obviously leaving a lot of the specifics.
Yes.
So now it's maybe time to get into it.
Yes. Yes. We got to talk about the specifics.
Okay.
Like specifically, we should pick one and like talk about what you actually do if you were a
thrusher. Yeah. What does our moment to moment gameplay look like?
Okay.
What are our things that we track? And this is also something where we're probably going to need to come up with something, a very scaled down version to prove this out. Right, like there will be many different qualities. Like Lydia, you were talking about, like the evidence of scavenger behavior versus preserved bones and tar. Maybe we just pick one thing for the paleontologist to find.
Uh-huh.
Just focus on how that works throughout all the systems.
Yeah,
knowing that there's going to be many more systems.
I'm wondering if the game needs to feel more abstracted than like literally playing as a triceratops. What if you just play as like a, I don't know if they're herds. Herd is a triceratops.
I think we believe that they were herd animals. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So because it seems a little silly to like play the day of a triceratops. The triceratops was not going to die out immediately after the meteor hits, but it would over time, and you can kind of see that progression and feel that progression.
Oh, so like follow a herd over a larger,
like you have the herd move to certain locations, and then they would feed based off of the location that they're in.
But you're not controlling one animal at any point.
Yeah, you're just controlling where everybody is migrating.
I kind of want you to control one animal.
Okay.
But it may not be the same animal through that sequence, perhaps. Maybe
you
control different parts of the herd, or there's a time jump or whatever.
Okay.
Through that sequence. And the reason I feel that way is because then you eventually control the paleontologist.
Oh, sure.
And I kind of want that to be like, I want that to feel like once you get to the paleontologist, you're still playing the same game.
I mean, can we kind of do it in the sense of like Oregon Trail, where you're following one covered wagon, but there's more than one person in the wagon? We're following one herd, but you could feasibly identify as any one of the people in the herd or the triceratopses in the herd at any moment.
That's kind of what you're suggesting, Stephen, I think, right?
Yes.
What I'm kind of like bouncing against a little
bit. Well, you're proposing that like each triceratops kind of has its own identity and personality in a way that I am not.
I guess like I'm trying to find the middle between you two.
Yeah.
Where it's like we are following this herd of triceratops, but at any given moment we may be asked to do an action as one of them.
Yeah.
And they're not identified as like this one, this is another button.
Yeah, okay.
Well, actually the way to bring that through and do the thing that I want to keep section to feel the same is that once you get to the paleontologist, you can play as a team or a research
team. A team of paleontologists. Yeah. That makes sense. You don't work by yourself as a paleontologist.
Yeah. That's sort of interesting. But like, so that you can use literally some of the same mechanics of like press,
no,
press the right bumper to switch between.
Yeah. And I totally understand because like you want there to be some kind of similarity between all of the things you're doing.
Because I think that really makes a lot of the themes we've been talking about work. Right?
No, I agree with you.
Because you think about all that history and then you also place yourself in it, which is that existential bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely subtext. That's not something we ever like put on a banner anywhere.
No. But this is an existential game.
Everything we do, I think, feeds into that really well. Everything we've talked about so far.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, because I don't want to... I think that I like that idea of you can kind of press right bumper to change which triceratops you are.
Yeah.
And
that makes it more of a simulation kind of thing.
Maybe.
As well.
Like within the herd.
Yeah. A little bit more of a god game in a sense.
Yeah.
But that is kind of where we're going.
Oh, I see. When you said god game, then I understood what you were saying.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, I guess that's fine. Yeah, I think that works.
Mm-hmm.
I was mostly just concerned about the idea that you're living one day in the life of a triceratops, which I don't think will get a point the perspective across.
Right. So it's like basically each chapter of the game is you playing as either, well, maybe with the T-Rex it is just one.
Sure.
Or maybe it's two. It's not a day in the life of each of them. It's like it's the chapter of the game and it could go on for quite a while.
Yeah.
With time jumps.
Like, this is the end of the Triceratops.
Right. So it's kind of like how Civilization VII has multiple eras. Turns within the era.
Yeah.
Maybe
stay tuned at some point.
That's kind of
what a Civilization VII episode.
Yeah. You can only bring it up so many times before we have to do it.
I'm imagining this is like a third-person perspective kind of 3D game. But this could also really be a top-down, very much turn-based kind
of. That's kind of why I was thinking of it in terms of abstracting it, because then you can kind of see, you as a player can see what's actually happening.
Right.
But you won't experience it in the way that you would if you were a first person.
Yeah, I kind of, I was thinking third person.
Third, sorry.
But I do want there it to be much more like the player embodies And that's it makes sense to bounce around within. That's okay, yeah. Because they are anonymous animals and you're not meant to be exactly them.
Yeah.
But I want you to feel like you're there.
Yeah.
In a way.
I want that too.
Yeah. We should also, that out. Really helps with the sense of scale, which we started with. Was
yes.
What does the world right. look like, small, medium, and big? It really should look different.
Yes.
So
that's right.
Third person side perspective, but it's a god game.
Yeah, right. So I think that's okay. So yeah. what I want from the reason why I'm bringing these things up is because when you're playing in a third person game, time perspective is not really there.
Yeah.
Because like things just kind of happen, and like a cutscene will happen and then it's day, and a cutscene will happen and then it's night.
Sure.
And I don't think we want that experience. It doesn't feel like that's the vibe we want.
Yeah.
And that's why I was thinking if it was abstracted, you could have a day and night cycle thing and it would make sense within the world.
Yeah.
But if we want it to be like, if we wanted to be a third person thing, I guess we could do something that's like Elder Scrolls, where like time is just kind of going over time and it doesn't, but like it could be sped up somehow or something.
There's a game, and I can't remember the name of it.
Okay.
But it's a game where there's this like stone head, and every time you move, time passes.
Oh.
And so like but you move very slowly, and it's like years pass every time you move.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So maybe it's, every, like, as you move as a Triceratops, it, like, time is visibly moving quickly. Like, the sun is rising and setting, and it's every time you locomote to represent the speed of time passing, but also to represent the fact that you are traveling quite far.
Okay.
So that way it's not like time is constantly moving even if you're not moving, but it is meant to be like, the player is going along this passage of time and choosing to pause in a moment, and it's like the time is paused, or choosing to linger and do a thing. And that, so essentially player action equals time is passing at an increased rate. And with the idea that you are, yeah. Does that make sense?
I think it does, but I think it takes away from what our core of this is, which is chapters, right? We're already going between different perspectives,
sure,
and different eras.
Yeah.
So I think that's too rich a system for what we want.
Okay.
So I guess my argument, I think, here is that we've gone down a bit of a primrose path.
Okay.
And what I would want to do is make it where you're playing a Triceratops.
Yep.
It's third person.
Yep.
And maybe you're among a herd, but you're playing as one.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you have a task. Find three things to eat today. And then you do that, and time doesn't have to pass, because once you've done that, then a cutscene happens? No, then that's just over.
Okay.
And then you do something else, either as another Triceratops or of its similar class, or maybe we move through very quickly, and now we're as a T-Rex. Mm. And you just play these little mission-based things, and a lot of them are the same mission, but then because we do time cuts between them, every one we go forward, every next one we do, the environment is affected more and more by the impact of the asteroid, but you see it in chapters. We don't need to like do a time system to see it literally happen on screen.
They're just little vignettes.
Like,
yeah, vignettes. Exactly right. Once you get to the paleontologist, you have a distinct memory of doing that thing.
Yeah.
And then the paleontologist uncovers evidence of that thing.
Okay.
So if I get it right, so let's say that it's the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
And you play as Triceratops for a day, then you're T-Rex for a day, then you're Scavenger for a day. Things are, and so essentially you've played three vignettes where things are still pretty okay.
Yeah.
There's some weird stuff with the sky, but you're finding plenty of food.
Yeah.
Then the next chapter is Triceratops. There's not as much food around.
Oh, bouncing back and forth.
T-Rex, Scavenger. Scales. And essentially it's like each chapter, or kind of each section or act, I guess, is everything is getting more and more terrible. And then within that act, you play as a Triceratops, a T-Rex, and a Scavenger, maybe in different orders, potentially.
Yeah,
you are following the timeline together with all three of the strata. Mm.
Yes, I think that's brilliant because it also lets you. It takes it away from being a roguelike, where like you can get a sense of how the different scales interrelate with each other quicker, because you're going bouncing around between them a lot.
Uh-huh.
And then by the time you get to the paleontologist, you'll have a sort of a broad understanding of the interaction between the different scales, and you'll know the area really well. And that is interesting. Mm-hmm. We could also certainly make it where you go from the scavenger and the triceratops and the T-Rex in whatever order makes sense for that part of it. And then cut to the paleontologist and then cut back. But that changes a little bit of how the time works, I guess.
Have this like just Reservoir Dogs timeline.
I guess we don't want to make it too complicated.
No, I would like.
But the vignettes is kind of what I think is it makes this idea work really well, is having the like first person perspective and then seeing that same thing from another perspective.
Yeah, I think that kind of makes sense. I mean, to connect it back to Civ, I guess it's like you have a city with the turn in front of you, and you have a plan, and then as you hit. When you like hit the end of turn, it says like, hey, what do you do about this? What do you do about this? What do you do about this? So you have to bop around your civilization and be like, oh, right, these exist.
Yeah.
And then you're allowed to move your turn and go to the next decade. But not in the sense of that, but in not in the sense of obligation in that way, but in the sense that like there is a moment of time where amongst all of these disparate individuals, the environment and the situation is the same.
Yeah.
And then only once you have done something as all of them do you get to move on in time. But then that because you have moved forward in time, the situation has changed.
Yeah, okay. I really like that.
Does that address whatever the thing that you were poking at?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
I think that I feel like one thing I feel like we might be losing though due to this change is that idea that like if you want to like better preserve your dinosaur for the paleontologist, you have to do a thing that is opposing the other thing. If it's just mission based, then I guess you could have a list of missions, and if you do two of the three, you move on to the next era, and then you could still do that.
I think you move on regardless.
Sure.
So I guess because
regardless of what?
Regardless of whether you complete the task or not. So maybe the thing is it can be like instead of say collect three pieces of food, it could be much less handholdy than that.
Okay.
It can be like you're a triceratops, you're hungry, have fun.
Yeah.
And then
okay.
And then just at the end
it's like when a action game the objective is survive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think the thing we want out of this is that when you're playing as the various dinosaurs,
yes.
You're writing a story.
Right.
When you're playing as the paleontologist, you are reading the story.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, mm-hmm. So success or failure is not necessarily relevant to the playthrough of the dinosaurs, but it is relevant to player motivation to want to do well or whatever.
Right.
But then that also gives them bouncing around gives them an opportunity to like, I'm not just gonna do the same thing again. You know what I mean? So that. Maybe that would emerge, but that is hard to know without playtesting. But yeah, making it—I still want it to be sort of like shorter vignettes. But I guess we shouldn't have like a "this is your checklist of actual activities, check, check, check," or "I only got two out of three" or whatever.
Right.
Like it should be a little bit more maybe secret and like how it's tracking progress.
I like the ideas of the explicit objective being something like the herd is hungry, and it's always the same every single day. And then there's the point where you're like, and then have the options and kind of the there's a French word for when you are on an edge of a ledge and you have the thought to jump, even if you're not, if you don't intend to jump at all.
Yeah.
Like my thought is we give them spaces for that moment. Like the herd is hungry and there's no food where you were before. You start to go towards a tar pit. And then you have that thought of, what if I walked into the tar pit? And that is a valid thing. Yeah. And you find like, oh, that means that your triceratops is really preserved, but you have stopped being able to, like that triceratops has died.
Well, also maybe like, you know.
Like objectively, you failed your triceratops' task, but you've done something else. Like you satisfied, like that's where the god play gameplay comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be more sandboxy. Right, like the less the game rewards you for doing anything, the more you'll be like motivated to play around and find your own rewards.
Right,
so that might be something that we would want to encourage. It's like here's an environment, here's your character's goals, like whatever you want.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And if your character's goals fall in line with how long you can play effectively your life, then it makes sense. But that's part of why I was thinking it needs to be abstracted because we're not emulating the life of a triceratops, but we are trying to have the player feel like a triceratops. And so those motivations should make sense. But also the passage of time also needs to make sense in that gameplay moment.
Okay. I think my argument is that you never, ever feel the passage of time. So we don't need to feel it in this game. Do you know what I mean? Like,
okay, so how do you determine when you don't, when your Triceratops is, your Triceratops playtime is ended?
Oh, I just like literally, when does the vignette end?
Yeah.
That's what was going to be my question is when, what is the like fail state or the end state?
So there's two ways to do it. One could be just totally arbitrary.
Okay.
Like it'd just be, you're a Triceratops for 20 minutes.
Okay.
Right? Like just make it just explicit to the player. You have this much time to play in this sandbox. What will you do in that time?
Okay.
And that is maybe not exciting.
Sure. It works.
That's a, yeah, it does the job.
Yeah.
The other thing is to actually make it much more player driven. So, and maybe there's something about how, if you play too long, maybe we can have it get dark and then just tell the player, you know, you're out of time. You're going to fall asleep.
There could be a time limit.
But, or you could just at any point toggle to the next thing.
Oh, just end it yourself?
Yeah, just like, okay, you're done playing as the Triceratops. You've had some fun. Now it's time to play as the T-Rex.
Yes!
And then you can essentially do as much of that as you want.
Yes!
You can even do very little of it. Mm. And then that leaves very little evidence for the paleontologist to uncover.
Yeah. Yes. Plus,
right?
Like,
you're telling less of the story to read.
No, that's great. And then you decide your own fate. No, yeah. You don't design your own fate. Well, you kind of design your own fate.
It's all just self-directed.
So, yeah. Like, you could run directly in that tar pit in 5 seconds, speed run it, and then you can sit there and be like, "Why can't I move? I should be able to move. Why did these game developers make this game so I can't move?" And then you sit there for 5 minutes doing your own anger, and then you just move to the next dinosaur.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. Actually, yeah. That's great. Okay,
and then I guess the thing that we need to have a mechanism for the smaller time jumps that Lydia brought in.
Yeah.
It progresses us through that period. I think that might have to be maybe something we like sneak up on the player. Like if you rotate through them enough times, then that time jump will happen and we don't really like let you know until you start noticing it. Maybe. That might be the best way to experience the passing of time.
Because
it sneaks up on you.
Can you say that again? Sorry.
So at any point, you can toggle between the, let's say, three different sizes.
Yep.
Yes.
Maybe a version of this will have many more things to toggle between.
Okay.
Or multiple of the same or whatever.
Okay.
And it's all happening at roughly the same time or whatever. We imagine the systems can all work and they're part of the same area.
Yeah.
But you experience the world on different scales. You bounce around as much as you want. After a certain point, like if the player does too much of it, then we will just have the sunset, right?
Okay.
Fair enough. And then just a little thing that says you got to go to sleep. And then that'll be kind of the end of that. But then the next time you come around to that animal, it is now the next period of time. Mm. But it does. But the game doesn't really tell you that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just played as the T-Rex and you wander around and you knock some trees over and you ate some little things.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, that was fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to see what the next thing is. You go to the next thing. And then you play for a little bit and you realize, actually, you know what? I was, the last time I was like this, this was different. Mm.
Yeah, I kind of like that idea in the same vein of like you are in a JRPG and you go to a town and everything's hunky-dory. And then you leave that town for a little bit. You come back and it's like raised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that moment of shock.
Yeah.
Especially like if you happenstance off of it, on it.
Yeah.
I love that moment. And I think that's that like, oh no, things have... What happened here is like such a visceral thing.
Yeah.
And especially if it makes your immediate life harder because of whatever size category you chose to play. Like as a scavenger, it might be like, oh, this is concerning to me as a human looking at this as a player, but I have so much meat to eat here.
Yeah.
but if you are playing as a like a T-Rex or as a Triceratops and you come back and it's like, oh, there's no plants here. What do I do?
Yeah.
Right.
That it's still the same kind of visceral reaction, but the same player's visceral reaction. And then the second thought is I, as a dinosaur, like this state is different depending on who I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's really neat to have kind of those two hitches emotionally, like right after each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's how I was imagining it too, is like when you swap from Triceratops to T-Rex and then eventually get back to the Triceratops, it would be a different day.
Yeah.
And you'd still be stuck in that tarp.
There's two ways to handle like that single period, which is one, we could try to make it where you play as the small dinosaur and then you're done playing as that. And then you play as the medium dinosaur and then you could have the small one as an NPC doing exactly what you did.
Yeah.
That's interesting, but it gets complicated because then where was the medium-sized one during your first playthrough?
Right.
Which is, we can just have say it wasn't there, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But a simpler way to do that is just say every time you go to the next one, it is a little bit later. And then so if you ate a bunch of plants as the small one, when the medium one comes, those plants are gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And you don't need to interact directly with those characters. But then once you get through all of them, and maybe it's just one for each, or maybe it's you cycle through like two or three per category. But at some point, you've got evidence of your last run through played, or that your playthrough happens all the way through that section. And then when it's time to really change the time to the next thing, then all those things you did will also impact that, but less so than the overall big change.
Yeah.
Right. So if you eat a lot of fruit off that tree,
yeah,
then like you just like eat it dry for like the two medium-sized playthroughs you get through before the time change, then the next one you see that it didn't drop any seeds, and so that tree is just dead.
Yeah,
or that grove is dead. You know.
Yeah.
Now that becomes a really complicated simulation. I think even independent of time and money, I don't think we'd want to be like a hugely simulated system. I think just a couple of things that react so that the player can notice them.
Yes. Okay. So
you can have trees toppled and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. But then you want the bigger world effects that Lydia was talking about that happen each jump.
Let's think about this in an analogy. So in terms of like, what is a true NPC? It's all the flora. Once it's eaten, it's eaten.
Yeah.
Once it's knocked down, it may not produce seeds and the fruits on the ground. Like essentially the flora has a state, and that is player influenced but not player controlled. And once it is like once it has its state changed in a certain way, it is there.
Right.
When it comes to the animals, I think we need to think about them in terms of like cars in GTA. So at any point you could become one of the cars. You can grab one of the cars. And then if you crash the car is crashed, it's there.
Right.
And that is its state now.
But it's Schrodinger's cat before then.
Yes.
Okay.
And so, but then like you can, and you can like, before you crash, you can jump out of it and get a different car.
Yeah.
And so then it's still in the playing field. Once it's crashed.
Right.
And that is what the game has to remember.
So if any of your so if you do die in your playthroughs, then those corpses live throughout the rest of the
season. Yes. Because then also like if you get to the corpse first as a scavenger and you eat it, then now its state has changed from it is corpse to it is like skeleton.
And that provides the multi-level storytelling that then you get to uncover as the paleo. That is so good.
Like you slowly go, like essentially your amount of NPCs grows over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There need to be landmarks, right? In order for the paleontologist to know where you've been and where, with respect to where the player had been in the past.
I think the paleontologist is only the player on their couch is going to have any memory or knowledge of the dinosaur playthroughs.
Sure.
Once you start playing as a paleontologist, there's no data saved. It is as if you start anew. And all you have is your own player memory.
No. That makes sense. But I mean, like, how are you going to know where you died as a paleontologist?
I think
so. You can discover it.
You have to pay attention.
Right.
No, but there's also some landmarks.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I mean.
Right. It's going to be the same world. It's just going to the decline.
Just like, there's a mountain over here. The paleontologist will go to the mountain.
There was a hill. I mean, but it's going to have to be rocky because of the road.
I think that's where having more than one paleontologist actually will serve us quite well. Yeah. Because what you can have is you can flip from one to one, and you can have like a paleobotanist say, there were cycads here.
Yeah.
Or
I found a... I found a flowering plant seed.
Yeah.
Or then like, I really think it would be fun to have, fun with quotations, heavy quotations, but like if you do a tar pit run, like a genocide run.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then it's just like.
Then you get written up in the newspaper. Like, they found all these.
Like massive, dinosaur burial pit.
Yeah.
Like evidence that this was a tar pit. Like tons of dinosaurs dead. It's just bones on top of bones. Like, you know, very like little special ending. But like all of the bones are in the same area where they have evidence that there was a tar pit. But I think like that's where you can have, because one paleontologist is going to specialize. They're not going to know as much as a paleobotanist or as a geologist.
Okay. Oh, and we can really play with dramatic irony, because as a paleontologist or a further specialty, you will have maybe a mechanic is after you. Think of a third-person game where you go around and you scan things. That's kind of what I'm imagining this gameplay
basically,
is like.
Yeah.
And then you are playing as different humans through different run-throughs of that for different areas of the geography.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things, because I want to address what you were asking about, like how do we remember where that is?
Yes.
I think you should, in many cases, just scan around like you're a paleontologist as if you don't remember anything.
Okay.
Like I want the player to just feel free to not have to remember anything.
Okay.
And then they will discover something and be like,
oh, I did this thing.
Yeah.
Past.
And but if you want to put some energy into trying to remember, that's a speedrun strat. Right.
Sure.
The point I want to make, though, is speaking to like what you're saying about the tar pit run. Like, what I think is interesting about that is that you can, when you're playing as the humans and you you find something, maybe there's a little mini game for analysis or some kind. We don't need to make it too complicated, but some gameplay that gets you to like a result. Mm-hmm. And then you write your report. And like maybe the mechanic is, this is like the simplest version of it. These are the three possible things that I, in my expertise, believe could have resulted in this.
Yeah.
You as the player know it's actually a fourth thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Right? But you pick what you think is closest because you're using your own experience and that's your intuition embodying that character. But there's dramatic irony there. And then that is a big part of like we didn't know dinosaurs had feathers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was so the butler along.
We get to play with a lot of that. You get to write the story, but then you also are in charge of reconstructing it. But your tools are kind of limited.
Yeah.
And if you don't leave the right evidence, if you just pile into the tar pit, like then the paleontologist is going to have to come up with a reason why that must have happened. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be the reason it happened.
Yeah.
It's just going to be their best guess based on their, and that is going to be what is presented as the guess. And that teaches people about scientific theories.
Yeah.
And about like this and, you know, historical reconstruction and how like. And the amount of like trust to put in these things was like, this is the best guess based on what we know, but we're not actually making a claim this is what happened. We're just saying that this is our very best guess. And if we found evidence that proved us wrong, okay, which is like an important part of the scientific principle, right? So I think that would be really fun to be able to, and then it's told through this idea of just, as a player, you could just do wacky things for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then like the paleontologist has to make sense of it. Mm-hmm. And you're the player who has to do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, that's
good. You have to figure out what you were up to.
I also really like the idea of like in the paleontology zone, you can pay attention to, you can go and look at and pay attention to the environment that the dinosaurs were in. Mm-hmm. And like maybe you dig up a plant trace fossil and you're like, oh shoot, I recognize that plant. It was in that area where I started with this dinosaur.
Yeah.
But then also, like, you could end up just beelining to the bones.
Mm. Right,
because that's the thing is like...
Beelining to the bones. That's good. Because this game is so good, it'll have you beelining to the bone. 5 stars.
Because it's like, as a kid, you're super interested in the dinosaur bones,
right,
because
right.
It's like, they're the big kaiju things, right? They can squish cars. But like, knowing about them as creatures within a bigger system is the more difficult question, and also the more interesting one sometimes.
Right. And having played through a lot of that will actually motivate you when you're playing as the paleontologist to engage with those things.
Yeah.
Instead of always going straight for the bones.
I think also, like, if you have the tar pit run, it is, I think that needs to be implied that, or I would want it to be implied that, you know, there's a lot there. You have no idea what is there.
Right.
Because like, if you've ever seen the Museum of Natural History in Harvard has a replica of this just pile of bones from, which was, I think, a ground sloth or something. And then a reconstructed single one behind it. Mm. And you're like, oh my gosh, how did they even think of, like, how many are here?
Yeah.
It just died in a pile. There's so many of them. And the fact is like, if you have that pit, it is fantastic because you have so much evidence, but you also can't look at it and go, this was a insert individual species name here.
Yeah.
Whereas if you die separate, then it's like, there's a Triceratops here. There's a T-Rex here. You have this kind of sense of like the unnamed masses versus a individual. In the same way that, like, you know, that Oviraptor I mentioned, they had the good mother is what they called it. And then there were another two Oviraptors reaching for each other that they named Romeo and Juliet. Like, they are individuals that the paleontologists recognize, as opposed to, this is a pile of formerly alive things.
Right, right.
And so, like, to your point of, we're making guesses, in the immediate sense, before they can go to the lab, they don't know what they have or how much they have. They just have a lot.
Right, right.
And that is, and like, is that the, and so then back to the existential idea about legacy, like, is that what you want? Mm-hmm. Like, you got the most preservation, but also, like, you've left a lot of work.
Right, yeah. Do you want to leave a lot of evidence to imply a lot of stuff happened, or do you want to leave, like, optimized evidence so that your paleontologist can come to a conclusion quickly, correctly?
Do you give them a forest that you can't tell the trees from?
Right. Yeah.
Or
yeah,
do you give them one really good tree?
Yeah.
It's all a metaphor. Okay. I like this. Yeah. This is so cool.
Here we go. Is this the part of Nice Kids Jam where we're like, I want to make this game?
Okay. Uh-huh. I do, though. I don't need... I want to make a game about dinosaurs. That is an actionable wish.
Yeah, Lydia doesn't need more than that.
I just like dinosaurs.
She was like, let's do it from jump.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I suppose we were already there. Yeah. That's great.
I am already invested. Let's go.
I genuinely think this is really fascinating, though. It's a concept for a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does that thing I love, which like, are the actual gameplay mechanics need to be engaging.
Yeah.
But actually, the real joy of it is the piecing it all together in your head that like happens as you go through and the contextualizing it and giving it weight and meaning and story, and that is in part the player's job.
I wanted to say something because I thought of it, but like talking about the eventually the sun sets and you end the session,
yep.
That reminds me a lot of this idea of like you decide, like as a person, do you decide to abandon what you see is in front of you on the hopes that there's something better? Mm-hmm. Because the idea is like if there's sparse brown grass and you're a triceratops, you could just keep walking past it and spend your time there. And eventually the sun sets. The question is like, is there anything better? Like, yeah. Are you going to find it? And the answer, eventually at the end, you realize, no.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if we make this space large enough, a big part of the early run-throughs could be about like, you know, walking until you find a better cache of feed. And then also when you're talking about like the sort of state of sort of NPCs, is like we can have some in the early periods before things get really bad.
Mm-hmm.
The early periods we can have, well, if you eat this thing, then like we will have it regrow, to 75% capacity or whatever. But then later it's like when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
And then you got to start thinking in a meta sense that is like becomes the player's thoughts and not the animal's thoughts about like actually trying to preserve this for like, am I trying to save all the dinosaurs? Do I just love these dinosaurs, like, and that's what I'm going to focus
on? How much do I eat now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, author's note, retractions, grass did not evolve until after the Cretaceous period. Sorry. They had for filming BBC's Walking with Dinosaurs, they had a huge problem. They were trying to find filming locations, and everything has grass.
Right.
They had to find a lava field to film in because that was the only place where they didn't have grass that they had to get rid of, like with post effects or whatever.
I see.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, grass didn't evolve. Sorry. I am also thinking like, oh no, we're going to have to butt against the whole like, was T-Rex a predator or a scavenger debate, which is just, I don't want to deal with that.
Like, we're not really engaging with, but like a proper production of this game is going to have opinions about things that are unsettled.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think a way to approach that would be to make educated guesses, but also not, but maybe even have like an author's note to be like, this is what the game has chosen, but like, this is not an argument we're making. This is just that we've picked a direction that seems most plausible, but here are the other options and here's some reading sources or something.
Yeah. I like the idea of also having the paleontologists bickering or like having their own theories very publicly of like trying to interpret it.
Okay. So this may be a little bit hard to implement, but like a way to really bring that theme in is to have your playthroughs be kind of like unreliable narrators. So maybe one playthrough of T-Rex, you do it in this way. In another playthrough, suddenly you have your coloration is different and you look different based on different theories, and your abilities are different because it's using a different theory.
Oh.
And then the paleontologist is left to decide which is more true.
Interesting.
That's like a whole dimension top of this. But
yeah. Yeah, like
that's interesting. Maybe that's something for future brainstorming.
As T-Rex, you could decide, am I going to hunt down this Triceratops or am I going to eat this dead one?
Yeah.
And then later on, they're in the paleontology thing, like, and it would, we would facilitate both. Like that is calories for the T-Rex, but then later on in the paleontologist phase, they're like, oh, we have evidence of bite marks on this Triceratops. Oh. And then they start arguing about whether or not it was hunted or scavenged.
So it can be purely behavioral. What the player does guides it rather than what I was sort of thinking actually presenting two realities.
No, I think
like let the player determine the realities.
And then have the paleontologist argue about it later because they are interpreting on, they don't know what happened. They're interpreting based on, oh, there's T-Rex bite marks on this thing. Yeah.
And of course, the player will have the memory of what really happened, maybe, maybe not. But then that will influence what they, as the paleontologist, decide. But then, of course, is that, but it's still based on one data point.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why the debate happens.
It's a human data point, which is already flawed and based on, you know, it goes into circles.
So you could do all the weird, you could behave weirdly as all the dinosaur runs, and it would still technically be a possible thing that could happen, and the paleontologist could draw whatever conclusion.
Yeah.
But like, then you're asked to say, like, was the T-Rex like this, or was this just what happened here?
Yeah, this is feeling very Red Dwarf. When it's like, no, the paper hats were supposed to be green, not red or brown or blue. Oh, yeah. I think that's fun.
I'm imagining, for some reason, I'm imagining the satisfaction of like chewing the fruit as a triceratops. Like, yeah, you hear a nice satisfying crunch.
Oh yeah.
And then you could potentially hear a nice satisfying crunch when you're chewing a triceratops.
Oh yeah. When the bone breaks. Yeah. Uh-huh. Nice.
I think one of the things that this game would really, this is why I think a third person perspective is really nice. Is that sort of feeling of being there.
Yeah.
I think will be really satisfying, especially if we make it very sandboxy.
Mm, yeah.
We don't like restrict the player's behavior and let them play around as much as they want.
Yeah.
Then it should be just fun to play around in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then all that other gameplay is just available for the taking.
Yeah.
But also you can just play through it and then be the paleontologist and just find all your things that you did, and then you're done. And like, mm-hmm, maybe you didn't get as much out of it as is available to you, but that's a way to play.
Oh,
you know,
interesting thought also, like, thinking about in terms of states of like, is tree like, has it fallen down? Is there fruit or whatever? Like, you could potentially do a run to preserve as much plant life as possible.
Right.
Yeah. Like, there's no dinosaurs.
Yeah.
But all of the botany is there. Like, you've got the fruit seeds. You've got the flower imprints.
Yeah.
You've got the cycads and the ferns and everything. It's like, and the site becomes known for its Cretaceous flora. But all the bones are garbage. Like, they're shreds. They're still potentially useful, yeah, but like, they are not, like, that is why it's special, right?
That is where just designing a system of like fairly rudimentary simulations that we're describing.
Yeah.
Could not be very complicated at all.
Yeah.
Could really, because you're the one driving it rather than an AI driving it necessarily, you actually can come up with lots of different.
Part of why it seems exciting, you know, like, actually work on this, because it seems, if you get the nice 3D models and stuff, it seems like a simple thing you could do.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
I could see how a producer would organize this project too, which kind of makes it really attractive. Is like, I could actually see how to make it.
Here we go. We're doing it. We're already doing it.
I would love to just spend my evenings researching dinosaurs and learning all the most recent science, so that way I could accurately give things to the artists and the programmers. Yeah. I would love to do this, please.
Well, if you've got an in with a publisher or an investor, like, let us know. Because
let me know for many reasons.
Yeah. No.
I could use the money.
Gotta get that dinosaur cash money.
Well, we've been talking recently about if we're gonna go to GDC or not, and this is the kind of thing we could take to GDC and pitch.
That's true.
Oh, we could also, like, Games for Change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I mean, we say it every time, but we also mean it every time. We really want to make this thing.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh dang it.
That's our show. We post show notes and such on our website, nicegames.club. Go there to find the rules of the game we made, as best as I could write them down, and totally gave a name to. That name is Dinosaurs of North Dakota. I decided that just now.
But
I like it.
Yeah, it's fun. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes, and you can get your episodes 1 week early. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. If you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Now you have your headphones on. Cool. Lydia needs to say cubes again so you can hear it.
Cubes?
No, in the way you said it before.
Cubes.
Lovely.